Let's ride, let's ride, let's ride.
Welcome back to the Let's Ride podcast. This is Pete Poyon. I'm joined by Matt Bocklet. We have two great guests from the heralded Ivy League in Harvard, the Harvard staff. And we're excited to have their two assistants, Neil Hutchinson and Will Corrigan, on. Two young up-and-coming coaches we're excited to hear from and get their perspective. And I think it's a very unique one in a program that's clearly taking a huge step forward. Matt, you want to get us going on some intros?
Absolutely. Excited to get the bios out for these guys. We'll start with Coach Hutchinson, who was the JUCO Offensive Player of the Year at Essex. So we know that's going to touch with Pete here. Tugging his heartstrings.
Region 20. Region 20, baby.
Fellow JUCO guy.
You guys were way back on the bios.
That's right. We do our research. So after his JUCO career, he went on to play at Towson University, where he then joined the Towson staff after graduating. And from Towson, moved to UMBC, from UMBC to Notre Dame, and not hard to figure out, from Notre Dame to Harvard, where Coach Byrne clearly liked what he had in him as an assistant coach at Notre Dame and brought him on, where you're now serving in your third season at Harvard. All right. And from there, we'll go with Coach Will Corrigan, a last name that everybody in lacrosse knows, and even collegiate athletics. Will played at Notre Dame for his dad, graduating in 2015, where he was a member of the team that went to the NCAA tournament all years. I believe a Final Four appearance in 2014, your junior year. Kind of went a different route after graduating and coached, was the head coach at Woodinville, a high school program, for a couple seasons, from there to Washington and Lee, where you were there, I believe, two seasons. And then, you know, Coach Byrne brought you guys to Harvard 3 years ago. So clearly you guys have a rapport with a coach who a lot of people consider as one of the brightest defensive minds and just overall minds in the lacrosse world. I've been fortunate enough to spend some time with your head coach. He brought me out to Notre Dame to watch you guys practice, and clearly you guys are having success in an extremely competitive Ivy League. And this year, after not having a season last year, going 8-4 in the regular season, doing some great stuff. So naturally, I'm going to start with you, Will. Because we actually have a closeness that no one might know about. You might not even know about this, but I have a 2.5-year-old Bernedoodle named Murray, which I got by the kennel in Fort Collins. And when I was picking him up, they were asking me what I do for a profession. And I said I was a lacrosse coach. And they said, that's crazy, because Murray's brother was just picked up by a lacrosse coach in the Boston area, and they wouldn't tell me your name or what was going on. But after doing a little bit of research and seeing a picture of your dad with a Bernedoodle that looked just like mine, I found out that we actually have each other's brothers. So we're kind of brothers ourselves right now, parents of two amazing Bernedoodles. So if yours is anything like mine, it's the sweetest dog in the world. Absolutely love it. Wouldn't recommend any other dog outside of a Bernedoodle.
Absolutely. Clyde is our dog. And my wife did some deep digging and found the same thing. And I remember she was like, look, another lacrosse guy with a Bernedoodle. I was like, that's incredible. That's a pretty well-known name in the lacrosse world yourself. So, you know, Clyde is the best. You know, definitely recommend Bernedoodles. I know Coach Hutchinson is a lab guy, and they have some dogs as well, but no, Bernedoodle is the best.
He's Coach Hutch has a couple of dogs, and he's also made it Instagram official that he's got a baby girl on the way. So we're excited for him in that regard. Congrats to you. How you feeling about having a baby here in the fall? Good timing, awesome. By the way.
It'll be great. It'll be done kind of when the baby will be here, when our fall ball is a little bit more towards the end, which is great. But I'm excited, nervous, you know, whatever you want to say. You're probably feeling all the emotions.
Yeah,
probably still hasn't really set in that I'm actually going to be a father, but it'll be here, and there's nothing that I can do about it at that point.
You're going to be able to skip some November recruiting, which is a silver lining there.
We also got the Harvard Yale football game coming up, which will be the first one that they have in Cambridge since we've been here. So looking forward to that this fall as well.
That's great, man.
So talk a little bit about your roles at Harvard, you know, how you guys work together, being that you weren't on a staff together prior to this, and all of you guys came together at Harvard as a fully new staff, new program, in the sense that you were starting over with Coach Byrne as that head coach. Seems like it's gone over pretty seamless for you guys, but kind of describe your roles within the program and how you're working together.
When Coach Byrne got the job in July, I think we both started, August 1st or whatever it was. And I've kind of been in the interview process with Coach Byrne for a couple of weeks. And the opportunity to come to Harvard was something that I thought was pretty special. And really wanted the opportunity to kind of build something alongside Coach Byrne. I had kind of known what Coach Byrne really liked offensively and stuff that he didn't like from my year working with him at Notre Dame. So that kind of made the seamless transition of the what we want to do here offensively. And Will obviously knew that from, playing 4 years for Jerry. So that kind of also has helped me figure out, what do we want to do here offensively? What are the things that we should be looking for? What are the concepts that we want to install with our guys? What are the rules that we want to play with? And then finding out, the sets and all that stuff like that comes kind of, after a couple of weeks and stuff like that, when you figure out, what do you really have in on your team? And so, that being said, I kind of work hand in hand with Will on the offense. He helps me with really everything. And, whether it's in the middle of a game, him throwing in an idea out at me is just like, hey, Hutch, what do you think about doing this? And kind of we talk about that stuff, pretty much daily. In fact, we were talking about a different play that we could be running, a little set action that we could run on the sideline in practice today. Just little things like that we're always trying to look for ways that we can evolve as an offensive group, but also as a team. I kind of take a lead on the offensive side. We work kind of hand in hand with a lot of stuff, recruiting, scouting reports, everything that's kind of a day-to-day thing in the office, visits, all that stuff. We kind of work kind of hand in hand with everything. And then I'll let, Will kind of talk about his responsibilities as well.
Yeah. So I work with the face-off guys mainly. I assist Hutch a little bit, but Hutch is selling himself short. He's done a great job with the offense this year. I've learned a ton from him about running an offense, about, X's and O's, and, kind of big picture of what to do. I give him my 2 cents here and there, having played offense and coaching it at W&L and coaching it at Woodinville. But no, he's done a great job. So I work with the face-off guys, faced off in high school when it was a much different game. So kind of had to relearn how to coach that. And Coach Byrne's been a tremendous help with me on that front, because what they did at Notre Dame, and Coach Hutch can attest to this too, is it was a full field game, and I think we did a good job of that this year, where our percentage wasn't great by, the normal statistic, but we were probably just about 50%, if not a little above, when you factor in, riding the ball back, them picking the ball up and us stripping them using the wings. So I learned a lot from Coach Byrne, and I work with our guys consistently on that and kind of going hand in hand with that. I coach the ride as well. So that's been something that I've always been passionate about. We were passionate at Notre Dame about it. If you remember, I think in 2013, it saved us a game. We were about to lose to Detroit Mercy in the first round of the NCAA tournament. We 10-man road and came back. And so knowing exactly, like Hutch said, knowing exactly what Coach Byrne expects, learning from him, we all coach kind of all facets of the game. Coach Hutch has coached the faceoffs before he did it at Notre Dame and has worked with guys. So I've picked his brain about that side of the ball too. So no, like you said, it's really collaborative. I enjoy working with him. I think we all enjoy working together. And one of the coolest things I think about our staff is Coach Byrne comes from, an assistant coach for a long time, was a Division II head coach, was in kind of the marketing world and the business world, where none of us have any experience in. So that brings a unique perspective. Hutch was a volunteer and then an assistant in Division I the whole time. I coached at high school in Division III, and then Coach Bergman, our volunteer, was a Division III All-American and then coached internationally for a couple of years. So we all kind of bring, we're kind of a melting pot of different experiences. And I think it shows with how we work together and the way we coach the game. It's been really cool to learn from each other and hopefully it showed on the field this year.
I think one of the
you got it, go Neil.
Yeah, one of the first conversations I actually really ever had with Will, he came home from WNL for like Christmas. And I hadn't gone back to Baltimore yet. And we were talking about faceoffs. And this was the first time I'd really ever coached faceoffs. And the only thing that I could really go back to was working at UMBC with Ryan Moran and Jameson Kester. So two guys that I thought were really good at coaching that. And basically, I then was talking with Will about all these different faceoff ideas and like all these drills. And then we ended up basically making up our own like version of squash with racquetball because we didn't have enough squash rackets and racquetball ball. Like, so we basically just played this whole weird game. And that was like really the one time that we ever really talked. And then we kind of like our relationship as friends outside of coaches kind of just blossomed from there. And we saw each other a bunch on the road that first June. And then when things kind of started to develop a little bit here, you know, we're kind of on the phone, and now our wives are like, oh, you got to call Will at 9:30 at night again just to talk about, you know, something going on tomorrow. Like, you guys can't wait. And that's just kind of where we are.
The answer is yes. Yes, we
do. Obviously.
So with my high school team, I'm the head coach, and I'm in the same boat. Face-offs, and not so much the face-off itself. We have a coach that works on that, but the wing play, and also I'm in charge of riding. And I don't think a lot of people realize that riding and face-offs can be put together, and there's so many different ways to win possession. So my question is, and I know it's going to upset the face-off men of the world, but what would be your thoughts on a face-off is not considered a win until you get the ball in the box, or like until you get that possession? Because in my mind, you know, I think that's what it should be, but telling a face-off guy that can pinch and pop forward and win the ball and get that ball on the stick, but then maybe he gets stripped or doubled or something along those lines. Like, I think it should be whoever gets possession gets that face-off win. So I'd be interested on your take on that thought.
The way that we look at it, right? And I won't speak for kind of all of lacrosse, because then you get into, you know, it's hard. How are we going to teach someone who doesn't even know the game to then make a discretionary call of, you know, did he have it in the box, right? Was he, you know, getting stripped as he went in? You know, there's it's up for debate. But the way that we do it, at least, is if they – whoever gets an offensive, gets their guys on the field and is playing an offensive possession is a face-off win. So we've had ones where, of course, we lose the face-off, you know, kind of, and the opponent wins it back and we ride the ball back. I count that as a win for us. We have other ones where they may win it forward, but our wings collapse and the guy has nowhere to go, or we switch a pole onto him. And 15 seconds later, because everybody's kind of pressing out and our pole gets to go to work on a faceoff guy, he strips him. He's been in the offensive box for 10 seconds, but we strip him and pick the ball up. I count that as a win for us because they never got to get their guys on the field. And you know, it was part of our strategy of all right, we may not win the clamp. We may not win the faceoff outright. How are other ways for us to get the ball and get a possession? And that goes both ways, right? If we win the ball, and you know, don't clear the ball, or we get stripped, you know, we pop it forward and we get stripped to throw the ball away, I count that as a loss for us because you can't have it both ways. So I like where your head's at on that. I think it's a really, you know, from a statistical NCAA standpoint, it may be tough, but you know, coaches who you know, coach faceoffs know that that's what it's all about, is getting possessions. It's not just about, you know, pinching the ball and putting it in the back of your stick.
Yeah, it sounds like you guys take a pretty holistic approach to that, and it's an undercoached part of the game, and I think it has been for some time. So well done, and I think it's only going to continue to evolve. I think the face-off itself is still in its infancy, even after all the year-to-year changes that the sport make in regards to how it's officiated and how we adjudicate it and all that. But I'm interested, you know, both you guys have interesting backgrounds. It sounds like you're in a really interesting and awesome place in your respective careers, and both at a phenomenal institution working together and figuring out kind of as you go. You've been through some interesting times in your first 3 years at Harvard, but I want to hear from both you. Just, you know, I'll start with you, Neil. You know, you're as a JUCO guy, you never know we're going to end up. Nobody knows where they're going to end up from a coaching standpoint. You're at the best institution in the world, you know, coaching lacrosse, and it's such a cool thing. I'd like you to walk us through your first 3 years and how the staff has navigated maybe the COVID situation, how you're going to recruit, some of the things that maybe you stubbed your toe on from this is how we're going to do this, and then it's quickly changed and you've had to pivot. And then Will, you could follow up on that and kind of go through the same thing, but if you could tie in how you're being a head coach at a high school. You know, I did the same thing at my alma mater, and I think it really helped me expedite the process of finding your voice as a coach and being in charge of things and giving you that head coach perspective that you wouldn't have had otherwise. I think it's invaluable. And for me, it wasn't until, you know, hindsight that I really understood that. But if you guys could both walk us through like your evolution as a coach and then, you know, their first 3 years at Harvard, that'd be great.
Yeah, I think, you know, when we got here, it was actually really cool to kind of start reaching out to the guys on the team. And there was just so much excitement about Coach Byrne and us coming in and just being able to kind of get back to the field and play. You know, so it was really cool to kind of, you know, the guys wanted to be great. Like the guys wanted to win. And that was kind of the one thing that you felt that the first day of practice. Like they listened to everything that we were kind of teaching them, whether it was, you know, ground ball play, offensive spacing, you know, slide packages on defense, right? Clearly, they were so receptive to everything that we were coaching. You know, one of the biggest things that, you know, you kind of mentioned like stubbing your toe on or something that we may have struggled with a little bit in the first 3 years was, you know, kind of losing that face-to-face contact and like the relationships. Like, I think that's so important. Of building that is when the season was just kind of abruptly cut short. All right. That was kind of really hard right away, but it just made the ability to, you know, you spent more time texting guys or calling guys than you may have done, you know, kind of in a normal regular season, just because you're not seeing them every day. And then kind of like, you know, I think lacrosse coaches in itself, like we're all kind of creatures of habit where we like kind of getting in our routine. I know like, yeah, I get up, I have my coffee. We have our staff meeting. We watch the film. We have practice. I get my recruiting phone calls. So like, having a big chunk of your day that was revolved around practice and, you know, your guys and watch home, like that was kind of gone in March of 2020. And then, you know, at some point you got to kind of stop feeling sorry for yourself and you got to kind of realize that there's still work to be done. So coming up with, you know, ways that we can still educate our guys on how we wanted to play and sharing that with them in any way that we could. And it was really cool that we had a large contingency of guys that, you know, still kind of stayed together throughout the pandemic, whether they were, you know, here in Boston or they went to different areas. It was really cool to see those guys kind of build their relationships, because I think that's also important. And then, you know, from the recruiting side of it, and Pete, you obviously know this being a college coach, you know, recently, but I feel like it made things a whole lot easier and harder at the same time, because everything became available to watch on film. You could, you know, go to YouTube and you could search any high school or club game and you could find anything, or you can, you know, use any of these internet providers that are, you know, blasting film out to coaches. But then you also, it's great to see it, but then you also second guess yourself where you're like, wait a minute, like I just watched this kid play 6-7 times now. And he wasn't that great in game 3, 4, 5, but he was awesome in the first 2 games. So now you're overthinking the evaluation of some of them. And then, you know, you spin that into kind of how do we sell Harvard without really being able to have kids here on campus through the dead period. And obviously, you know, everybody says Harvard's Harvard, but, you know, people are like, you know, kind of scared by it at some point. But, you know, there's more athletes here at Harvard than there are at any other school. And when people hear that fact and that tidbit, they're kind of blown away. They're like, no way. But there's 42 different varsity sports here. And there's, 1,200 undergraduate student athletes here of about 6,000 undergraduate students. So the student population is actually way more than people actually really think. And so there's
are we talking, people like you. Are we talking chess or what are we talking here? What are
varsity? No, I mean, well, you get to like sailing, you get football, you get lacrosse, baseball, you know, the soccer team, swimming, water polo, like that. I mean, any sport that you could imagine, like they offer it.
Yeah, that's awesome.
It's kind of cool that there's a wide variety of it. And, you know, that being said, like there's people like you and I here, there's people like, you know, any 18-year-old, you know, guy or girl that's coming in here. And people kind of get this myth that Harvard's this, you know, scary place and it's, you know, impossible to be successful. But, you know, there's people that are here that just want to do nothing more than help you be successful. And so once we kind of tapped into that side of it, and, you know, I think the pandemic actually kind of helped us and forced us to, you know, find that information out. And now we're able to kind of, you know, disseminate that information into the, you know, general population.
And Will, can you elaborate on that or bring a different perspective and talk about how being a head coach at the high school level has helped you your first
year? Yeah. I think the 3 years, you know, that we've been here have been obviously really interesting. You know, we went through something that everybody was figuring out how to do. And I think it made us, you know, we were fortunate. I think we handled it really well as a staff and Coach Byrne kind of figuring out how to, you know, not say woe is me and connecting with our guys like Coach Hutch said and figuring out all right, getting all four of us on the same page in terms of what we wanted to do and you know kind of going from there, right? We got to catch up and do some stuff with our alumni, with the guys on our team, with kind of organizing, all right, what are we going to do when we get back? The season that we didn't have, we watched a ton of lacrosse and learned, right? We came up with new drills. We you know worked with the guys we had and kind of workshopped like, all right, this is what we want to do. So when we get back in August, we're hitting the ground running. So, you know, the 3 years have been really interesting, but I think you saw this year that you know, what we did paid off because we had a really, you know, we had a really good year this year and hoping on Sunday that, you know, we hear our name called. But in terms of my perspective and being a head coach, like you said, it was an unbelievably kind of challenging but really fun experience. I think, you know, graduating from Notre Dame in 2015, I knew I wanted to coach, but I didn't want to be a volunteer yet. Like I didn't want to be around college kids yet. I was like, I just graduated college. I just didn't think that I was ready for that. So I was looking at different experiences. I knew I had to get out of South Bend, had spent far too long there. So it was, you know, went almost as far away as you could within the continental United States and went out to Seattle and worked for some people out there who didn't have as much lacrosse knowledge, but had, like Coach Byrne, you know, had started their own businesses, were really successful individuals in their own right, and hired me because I had lacrosse experience, but didn't have any other experience, right? Like kind of had the background of family, and, you know, my family had been coaching, but I hadn't really coached much myself. So, you know, I was drinking from a fire hose for 2 years, and I still think it was probably the most formative time in my life. I was, you know, finally out of South Bend. I was learning. I had people kind of holding my feet to the fire saying, you're a head coach right now. Like, I don't care if you're 23, like, you know, these are my 4 years in high school. You know, I was running the youth program and trying to recruit kids in the area. So, you know, had a lot of people looking to me and, you know, a few people, you know, kind of the people who hired me really helping me and pushing me to be like, we want this to be yours, but you need to kind of take it. And I learned so much from that. I don't think I would be the man and the coach that I am today without those years. You know, I still talk with my wife. I've met my wife in Seattle. So, you know, another positive that came from being out there and it was, you know, it certainly has made me a better coach. I had to coach face-offs out there because, you know, there was just no one else to do it. I was, you know, helping coach the defense, the offense, you know, coaching a lot of different areas of the game, which you do as a head coach, which Coach Byrne does and my dad did. And I knew that I wanted to do. I wanted to know at least enough about everything that I could help people. So no player felt left out and no coach felt like I was leaving them on an island, you know. So was able to do all that. And like I said, it's helped me a ton in my coaching now. And you know, hopefully it helps me going forward.
Hutch, what was your... You gave a great perspective on the first 3 years, and Will, I appreciate what you just shared about being a head coach. That's awesome. But how did the junior college experience help you? And what kind of influence did Coach Burke have on you?
I was actually texting with Coach Burke last night. He was saying that they got a bye before the playoffs and yeah. He was asking for some drills, but I think that, you know, and Pete, we may have had a different experience, but, you know, when you're on a team where probably maybe 10 of those kids want to go on and actually play serious college lacrosse.
Same experience.
And then some of those, what's up?
Same experience.
Yeah. So you have, you know, some other guys, you know, don't want to be there, but it's like, how can you keep the other guys locked in so that you're getting the most out of practice? I think that's one of the things. And obviously, you know, again, we could think back to it. I was probably, you know, a little immature myself at that point. And I probably didn't bring it every day. I hope that I did, but I can definitely see that I may not have on a certain day or two. But, you know, that being said, it's helped me kind of understand that you have to articulate everything. And you, like, the players these days are so smart that they're going to know when you don't know what you don't know. So you can't lie your way through and just say, hey, we're just going to do this drill just for the point of doing a drill. And so that's something that I always thought about. Like when I was a player, what were some of the things that I liked best? And what were some of the things that helped me really kind of understand the concepts that we were trying to get better at? And so understanding that, like being able to articulate, you know, why are we doing this drill? And then being able to connect that drill with maybe something in our 6-on-6 offense or our extra man, or whether that's, you know, a transition offensive drill, like being able to connect that drill that we're doing within how we're trying to play as a team. I think that that's kind of how I've taken my junior college experience and kind of translating it there, if that makes sense.
No, it definitely does. Coach Burke was awesome. Yeah. You know, he's great about staying in touch with his former players. And I know he's super proud of you. But, you know, you're forced to be like kind of a senior as a freshman and definitely as a senior as a sophomore. And you're forced to keep guys locked in practice, but also keep guys locked in off the field and not making bad mistakes off the field and being intelligent about, you know, what you're doing and how you're doing it so that you could accomplish your own goals selfishly. So I just thought it was and as I get older, I continue to look back on that in those 2 years as 2 years that same thing. I was definitely immature. Everybody is as a freshman or sophomore in college, but definitely pushed me into a leadership role early and made me kind of get the guys around me to do what I was doing so that we could do what I wanted to do. So I just wanted to get your perspective on that. I think it's a really cool and unique story that not a lot of junior college guys do what you're doing. So well done.
I think one thing to kind of build off of that, and you guys have all touched on it, like being kind of a head coach at a program where like you're kind of the only guy that's always there, right? You guys might have an assistant coach that comes in, but he might just be showing up for practice. So like Coach Burke at times, like, you know, he, you know, just like the offense guys would just be down shooting with, you know, and whether it was me and Travis Crane, who's at Ohio State now, like, but, you know, there'd be guys that, hey, it's you guys down there. And then Coach Burke would spend a little bit more time with the defense, or he'd be down with us and he'd spend a lot of time with the offense. And then he was holding us to a really, really high standard. So you don't get to go from having a high standard on Monday and then, you know, basically taking off Tuesday, Wednesday, and then having that high standard again on Thursday and think that you're going to perform at a high level. It just doesn't happen that way. So I think that that's one of those things that I kind of really gathered and kind of understood at that point in my life was you can't just be good on game day. Like you got to bring it every day in practice. And that's how you consistently get better. And you kind of become the best version of yourself. And I think that you hit the nail on the head with the leadership. You got to find your voice there a little bit.
And I think this transitions nicely into what we were going to ask about next. You're talking about remaining locked in. You mentioned Travis Crane at Ohio State with a very similar scenario. And you even brought up the idea of, you know, you're waiting until Sunday to see, you know, hoping your name gets called. You're in an interesting spot right now. You had a great regular season, but you're not necessarily a lock for the NCAA tournament. And you're kind of in a wait and see type week. So, Will, how have you guys been handling this week with your team? With the other coaches, kind of what's your approach look like and how do you keep your players dialed in even though there's uncertainty with your future?
Yeah, I think we've approached it a little bit like a normal week, you know, in terms of, you know, we watched the film, broke that down, said, all right, where can we get better? You know, but without an opponent to prepare for, we're kind of focused on ourselves, right? So we're playing a lot, right? Because we don't know our fate, we're playing and enjoying being together, because if our name isn't called Sunday, you know, we want to be able to say, hey, we had a lot of fun together. We got to spend this quality time. and we want to get better, right? Our team's so young, right? They, our guys are hungry. They want to still be out there. You know, we really want to continue to get better, right? So we've spent this week kind of doing that, right? Is trying to get better in different ways, you know, getting healthy, right? I mean, the Yale game, I don't know if you guys watched, you know, if you didn't care who won, it was an unbelievable game, right? But it was a physical, you know, it was hot out, but it was a crazy physical up and down game. So we've spent some time, you know, getting healthy, making sure we stretch and do the proper recovery, getting in the weight room. But obviously, you know, our fate's out of our hands. So we're controlling what we can control right now, right? We're trying to get better and playing and enjoying this time that we have. You got anything to add there, Hodge?
Nah, I think we'll hit the nail on the head. It's just, you know, we're just trying to get better and focus on ourselves. And, you know, there's some things that maybe we haven't been able to address kind of through the last couple of weeks of the season, because you're focusing on the opponent and what you're doing, you know, offensively, defensively, you know, ride clear, all that stuff. But, you know, now we're able to kind of shrink practice a little bit, focus on what we can control, like Will said. And, you know, what are some things that we need to get better at, whether that's, you know, individually or as a midfield line or as a group offensively, and dialing that stuff in, and has been kind of helpful for the last 2 days.
That makes sense. We're going to actually play a little game real quick and pretend that Pete and I are the head of the NCAA selection committee. So make your case right now as to why you guys should be in.
I'm going to let Will start with this one.
I think we've had a great year, man. You know, it's ultimately up to you guys. Yeah. We've played really well and have some good wins. Yeah. Feel like we're playing really well. We had our chance, you know, against Yale to control our destiny. Now it's up to you guys.
I got you at what RPI? You're at a 12 right now. That's probably the best thing that for your case, right? And it's a good schedule, and you know, obviously that Yale game is a tough one, and not being in the Ivy League tournament, seeing that, you know, you played a 12 game regular season, you know, would you maybe, like, in the future, was that because you know you're hoping to be in the Ivy League tournament, would you look to add more regular season games as you move forward? Is that something you'd look at, maybe, you know, removing some of those guaranteed wins from the schedule and try playing a more, it is a very challenging schedule, but, like, you know, maybe that season opener, games like that, we won't say those names out loud, but, you know, is that something that you're looking towards in the future, you know, strengthening that schedule, you know, as you look back, like, obviously hindsight is 2020, you can make a ton of different changes, but, you know, you're in an unbelievable conference, right? A conference that could arguably have six teams in there. And I guess that's what you would be, you know, fighting for right now. And you have an unbelievable win against Princeton, Brown. I mean, these are, you know, some great games. So is there anything that you would, you know, that you'll look to change? We're not saying that you're out, because I'm hoping that your name's called. I think the Ivy League is just that deserving this year. The way you guys all, you know, beat each other up is extremely impressive. And it's kind of like, you don't know what's happening in each of those games. And that Yale game was incredible. And that rivalry obviously brings a lot out of it. So, you know, let's say you're looking towards next year, which we're not, you know, are there any changes to your schedule or things that you guys are trying to do as you have proven yourself to be one of the best teams in the country?
I mean, we haven't finalized the schedule for next year. You know, anything like that. I think, there are a couple of teams that will remain on the schedule. I won't say who they are. It's not my, our position to say that as assistants. But we definitely are looking at, you know, how can we, like, you know, at the end of the year, I think you always look back, what can we do differently? And whether that's, you know, strength and conditioning, you know, on-field coaching, you know, film sharing, you know, to your schedule and who you play and all that stuff and where you play and kind of almost also when you play. And so, you know, there's obviously some challenges with that. And you know, we're always going to play fewer games just with a later start date in the Ivy League. But you know, we're also looking at, you know, how do we play some ACCs and some Big Tens and stuff like that. So, you know, I think challenging guys. And you know, I think that, you know, we have a confident group. We're not arrogant. We're confident with, you know, our ability. And we kind of know that we're going to be in games. And I think that we've done a really good job of kind of changing the narrative of what Harvard lacrosse is. And you know, I think our guys are kind of really the guys that have been driving that train. And like I said, you know, when we first got here, they wanted to be great. We wanted to be great as coaches. And so that's kind of like our mission is, you know, we want to make sure that, you know, Harvard's one of the best teams in lacrosse. We want it to kind of be where you think of Harvard academically. We want that to be Harvard in lacrosse. So hopefully that kind of answers your question about the scheduling.
Yeah, I mean, we totally understand that you guys are not in charge or pushing that narrative. But, you know, I was always in Greg Raymond's ear at Hobart, trying to influence him in any way I could with all things, but scheduling being one of them. And so, you know, it is hard to navigate because you don't know how the conference is going to look year to year, and hindsight is 2020, but you guys have certainly changed the narrative, and it's been awesome to watch you guys play. That Yale Harvard game was incredible. Kark was talking about, you know, just what a rivalry this game will continue to be. As you know, Harvard Yale has always been a rivalry historically in every sport, but in the sport of lacrosse, you could certainly see it trending in that direction. And I think the stronger that rivalry gets, the better it is for me selfishly as a viewer and a fan now. So that game was incredible. I want to touch on the recruiting piece of things though, because I think you're in a really interesting situation. You mentioned it earlier in terms of what the narrative is surrounding coming to Harvard as a student and just how daunting or intimidating that may be, and the stigma that the Ivy League as a whole maybe is out there. And I, you know, you're looking at probably be continuing to become a tougher team, like every team in the country, continue to get guys in on your roster that are leaders and that care about the sport of lacrosse. I think that is the bane of the Ivy League recruiting process, is finding guys that are obviously academically driven. They've proven that and are high achievers and very intelligent human beings, but guys that really have a premium on the sport of lacrosse and what they want to accomplish in the sport. So I would imagine that, you know, at some of the places that I coach, we could take a risk on a kid that maybe isn't as high academic, but is extremely talented. And you guys probably aren't afforded that as much, but on the flip side of it, tell us what your biggest challenge is in the recruiting world, and if that may be part of the, hey, we need to find guys that are driven on the lacrosse field, not just driven in the classroom and, you know, getting on career opportunities and great internships. I mean, I think college kids these days are under so much pressure in all things, but specifically when it comes to finding a career and doing what they're supposed to be doing on paper, but not necessarily focusing on their personal growth and development, their leadership qualities, their work ethic, building strong relationships with their teammates, things like that. Walk us through your biggest challenges from a recruiting standpoint, and if any of those things tie in. Either one of you guys can take that, doesn't matter.
Yeah, I think that, you know, anywhere you are, you're always going to have a challenge. You know, if you're one of the top programs out there, it says, are you ever going to play there? And then it's, oh, does that school care about lacrosse? Or, hey, how long is that guy going to be there? Or, you're never going to play. Like, there's always going to be a challenge wherever you are. And Pete, obviously you've been at a couple of different schools. Like I've been, you know, at a couple of different schools as well, and three very different ones. So the challenges are there wherever you are. So I think, you know, for us here at Harvard and, you know, it's kind of, you know, changing the narrative that, you know, Harvard can be good at lacrosse. And one thing that people don't really understand, like, you know, Harvard was in the NCAA tournament. I think 2016 was the last year that they were in it. So, like, it's proven that it can be done. You know, the basketball team, you know, was basically on track to be in the tournament in 2020 before the COVID, you know, shutdown. The hockey team was in the Frozen Four in 2018 and 19. So, you know, teams here are proven that, you know, you can be successful here, not only as a student, but also as a sports team here. So, trying to, you know, prove that to, you know, kind of 16, 17, 18 year old kids that haven't seen it in person. I think that's one of the obstacles that we're kind of overcoming. And I feel like we did a really good job of that this year. You know, I also talked earlier about, you know, the stigma of Harvard is, you know, just strictly an academic institution. But, you know, there's 1,200 different varsity athletes here. And then I think there's another 700 athletes that are involved in the club or the club sports organizations here on campus. So, you know, and then, you know, that being said, like our games this year were jam-packed. You know, our Princeton game, we had 2,400 people there. The, you know, Dartmouth game, we had like 1,900 people there. The Brown game was huge. The BU game was huge. So we have a lot of support from, you know, within Cambridge itself and Harvard as a university. So it's really awesome to kind of see that. We're able to kind of put that into focus now because we have had kind of our first full season with, you know, multiple home games and everything like that. So that people can actually see the product that we're trying to put out there and that, you know, the Harvard lacrosse program is going to kind of be all about.
Yeah, I think one thing that everybody struggles with is the evaluation piece. You know, I think, you know, Coach Hutch and I, you know, we're going through some past all-star teams and, you know, really highly ranked recruits, you know, from the past, you know, half decade. And it's like, it's really hard, right? Like, you know, media is ranking people, we're recruiting guys. We think guys are no brainers or, you know, guys, we think I'm not so sure about him. And they turn into the complete opposite of what you thought, right? Guys get more athletic, you know? So one thing that we try to focus on is talking to coaches, talking to club coaches, high school coaches, you know, parents, learning as much as you can about the kid and the people surrounding them, because that's a really hard piece of recruiting for everybody, right? Is figuring out, hey, how, you know, how much do they want to work, right? How much have they worked, right? Have they had, you know, have they been working really hard all along, or are they just starting? They just started, you know, loving lacrosse and they were a three sport athlete, right? And they're now focusing on lacrosse, right? And that kind of ties into, you know, one thing that's huge for us is, you know, you want guys that want to be great at everything. But obviously the academic piece is more difficult here than it is at some places, right? But it doesn't mean it's impossible, right? There's guys that do really well here. And so we want guys that obviously want to be great on the field, but then also want to be great in the classroom. Don't want to, you know, don't want to be like me. I was like, yeah, C's to get degrees and let's play lacrosse, right? Like we want guys who want all of it, because that means if they care about school, they're going to plan ahead and they're going to do that part really well. So that when they get to practice and they don't have anything moving over their heads, right? And they can just focus on lacrosse and enjoy that piece because they're handling their business on in every aspect, right? And I think that's a really, you know, Coach Byrne kind of brought that to my attention, at least on kind of how, you know, it works is this, it's not that it's so challenging here that, hey, you know, you're going to have to really buckle down and do this. Like, no, you should want that challenge, right? Just like, you know, you don't want to play Scribini's, right? Everybody wants to play in the Final Four, not just because it's a cool atmosphere, because you're playing the best teams in the country. You're proving that you're one. Why wouldn't you want to do that academically too, right? Like, hey, I want to, you know, get taught by the brightest people in the country, you know, in the world, and have that challenge in all aspects, right? Competitiveness isn't kind of a one-dimensional thing, right? It's I'm only competitive in this. You're either competitive or you're not. So that's kind of something that we found that we look for a lot in guys, because that's really important to playing the game and being here.
I like that. C's get degrees. Notre Dame. little shout at him. I appreciate that. Neil, I'm going to start with you. I want to kind of get into your mind a little bit for the high school players. It's the beginning of June. You're showing up to your first summer tournament with a blank slate. You know, you're looking at the 23s, the current juniors, the 24s, the current sophomores. You know, what are you looking for specifically on the field in the players that you want to start recruiting? And then, Will, if you could follow up with, now you've got that kid on campus, you know, what are some of those red flags that you might be talking about with like the competitive nature and things along those lines? So Neil, we'll get started with you there.
Yeah, I think, you know, for me, it kind of boils down to a couple of things. So one, I think you can tell kind of general athleticism by the way that a guy moves. The guys that are freaky athletic, they kind of leap off the page and you kind of put a little note right next to their name kind of right away, just by, and you can kind of see it the way that those guys are moving in warmups. you can kind of, you see the athleticism kind of right off the bat. The second thing is kind of like their IQ, and you know, it's not necessarily they're this, you know, like grade smart. It's like they understand how to play lacrosse with other people. And I think that's something that people really don't always understand, especially at kind of that level, whether you're a sophomore or junior. It's understanding how to like clear space for a guy to dodge, or understanding when to just move the ball one more, or understanding, you know, the off ball cut and the lane that's actually open, the timing of that. You know, that's from an offensive standpoint. And then like defensive standpoint, like understanding, you know, help defense and sliding, because you know, sometimes you go to a club game or a high school game and there's, you know, just no slide, or two guys are sliding. So, you know, being able to communicate that and being able to listen on the sideline for what those guys are saying, I think is really, really important. So, and then, you know, obviously the specialty situations, you know, there's probably, you know, five things that you can look for there in both a faceoff guy and a goaltender based on, you know, what fits the way that you guys play as a program. And then, you know, I think the other thing that I look for the most is who gets ground balls. Cause I think that that's one thing that Will kind of talked about with the competitiveness, like who are the guys that win those 50-50 ground balls, and even the 60-40 ground balls that might not be in their favor. Those happen all the time. I feel like there's always scrums between the restraining lines, and it's all about just who wants a little bit more, right? Who's in there fighting for it. So like you always notice those guys. And normally when it all kind of boils it down, you're looking for guys that are super athletic. You're looking for guys that really know how to play. They kind of always end up around where the ball is. And so that, in my opinion, really helps kind of evaluate and find, all right, these are the guys that you really kind of felt in this game. And then you kind of build your kind of board out from there, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I think, you know, touch the nail on the head. So when they, you know, when we're then, you know, communicating with them or they're on campus, you know, it's hard to tell how competitive they are when you're walking around campus. So it becomes more about, can they hold a conversation, right? Are they genuinely interested in this? Are their parents letting them kind of control this process and letting the players, you know, drive this? And is it something they truly want, or are the parents kind of really involved in trying to be a part of the whole thing, right? So it's, you know, the visit, obviously Harvard is Harvard, and everybody has kind of their thing that they sell at every school, right? Everyone has their routine, but everybody is looking for, and us especially, we're looking to see if guys can hold a conversation, if guys can talk to you. Do we talk to our guys when they spend time with our guys? Are they, you know, guys that care about the right things and, you know, are mature enough to handle being in, you know, a city and at a school like this? And, you know, so it's really, it becomes less about, you know, what kind of player they are. And when they're on campus, it's about who they are as a person, because that's critical. That's, you know, probably more important in this whole thing too. Right. And so, yeah, I think that's the biggest thing that we're looking at once we get to that point, is you just want guys that care about the right things that you can, you know, hold a conversation with.
Pete, you kind of mentioned this earlier about, you know, being able to, you know, maybe take a risk on a guy that might be, you know, pretty talented, but, you know, may not have the grades at a certain institution. You know, if you kind of do your research on, you know, all the stuff that we kind of talked about, and to Will's point of, you know, spending time with the recruit, their family, letting them, you know, interact with our current players, you know, really do some due diligence on, you know, who they are. You know, at the very least, you know that they're going to be happy where they are, and this is a place that they want to be. And, you know, with that being said, like, if that guy doesn't turn out to be the stud defenseman or the first line middie or the all-American faceoff guy that you thought he was, he's still going to bring you everything that he has. And so when you have that, like, yeah, you don't like to miss, but you still have a guy that's going to contribute in a way that you maybe didn't think that he was going to contribute. And I think that's still really important, because, you know, you guys see it, like, only really 20 guys play in the college lacrosse game right now. So you got to have a great supporting cast wherever you are.
Yeah, that's a huge piece. I think, you know, especially in your case, because there's incentive to transfer from a lot of places. There's not much incentive to transfer from Harvard. There's also incentive to stay on a lacrosse roster at Harvard, regardless of whether you're enjoying your experience or whether you're a leader or whether you're providing what you just mentioned. Now, I feel like as a staff, you guys could see right through that stuff and get those guys off the roster if that was were the case. But it's definitely probably more of a question mark at your institution, where anywhere else, if they're not happy because they're not playing, they can just, you know, get in the transfer portal and leave. The parenting thing is a huge piece, and it's something that I feel like is, you know, parents consistently say, well, I've never been through this process. Well, no parents have ever been through this process unless they've had multiple kids go through the Division I recruiting landscape, which is rare. And so I feel like it's like the rest of parenting where you have to let your kids go through the process and guide, but don't push. And I feel like it's really easy to see a helicopter parent when they present themselves, and the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. And I think it's as much recruiting a parent as it is a kid. And I think parents need to be as aware of that as any, as the kids. But I really appreciate that perspective. I'm going back to the ground ball talk. I would say the parallel between ground balls and lacrosse is winning the tee on the squash court. So you guys play a lot of squash. Who wins the battle of the tee? And who's winning the overall match most of the time?
So I will admit that Coach Corrigan, he's got it on his little whiteboard over there next to his desk.
I love that.
He's up 20-17 on me in the last couple matches. We haven't played in a while, but we got to get back out there. It's very strange that he started keeping score when he did. I think I had him, you know, maybe four or five straight times that we played. But those somehow magically don't appear on the whiteboard.
It's too long ago. We couldn't remember for sure. He's not even sure of it. So, yeah, all I know is that in recorded games, statistical games, I'm up 20-17.
Now, Coach Corrigan also grew up playing tennis.
I was going to say, like, caveat, this is not
he's
really
a racket
fair.
Guy. So.
I grew up playing racket sports my whole life. So
tennis
I definitely have an advantage, but Hutch hits the ball so hard that at times I literally do not see it. I just hope that by the time it slows down, I still have a chance at it.
That tells me that Hutch has a long way to go, because it is not about hitting the ball hard in squash.
He's learning the drop shot. As Coach Burns says, you know, it's all over when Hutch gets a drop shot. He still has not got it yet, though. So we still got a chance.
You guys have a welcome invitation to join us anytime you want in Cambridge.
So I
started playing with him. Don't get near him. He'll run you over.
I started playing squash at Hobart with the staff there with Coach Hirsch, who's now at Princeton, and Coach Raymond. And it was a great workout. But then, you know, we thought we were decent. I thought I was just like, oh, I'm athletic. I can beat anybody at this. So we met the professors, like a group of professors that would play every day at noon. And I played this like I'm not kidding you, like an 80-year-old man. And he just put me out of my misery. I was like, this is ridiculous. This guy can't even move. And he's just crushing me. And that's when I learned. Because I used to just hammer the ball and think it was all about quickness. And it was just like this guy stood at the tee and just like reached out with his long arms and just hit really good shots to the back corners. And I was like, this is impossible. I'm running all over the place. It was good in the sense that I was getting a workout in, but it was definitely a hit to the ego. That's for sure.
We actually, we played with the guy that graduated in 2020, Watson Cheek. You know, normally me and Will will play like, you know, 11, 9. If it goes to, you know, a couple extra points, it goes there. But normally we're pretty close. Watson just absolutely demolishes us. And it's like 11-1, 11-2. He knows everything. He hits some like trick shots and he's just kind of fooling around with us a little bit. So it's kind of a little unfair. But he's one of those guys. Like the squash players, they know how to move. They know how to hit the ball. They know the angles that they got to hit. Watson's one of those guys, and he's pretty talented at it, which drives me crazy because I hate losing.
We do have so the men's and women's squash teams are the best in the country. They've won national championships. I think they both went undefeated this year without dropping a single match. Mike Way is the head coach, really, really nice guy. You know, has seen us because we go play on the courts all the time, and we'll catch him and some of the other assistants kind of walking by and just snickering at us playing because it's so uncoordinated and so ungraceful, even for two guys who were, you know, Division I college athletes. It's ugly in there. We're like running into each other. We're, you know, I've caught a racket to the face a couple times. It's a mess, but it's fun. You know, like you said, it's a workout and it's between the two of us, it's really competitive, and that's what we're looking for. So
we really don't even know all the rules.
No, we're making stuff up. As we
don't need to. Yeah, you just make them up. I know exactly where you guys are, man. This takes me back to my Hobart days. You know, you're at an uppity school when you're playing squash on a regular basis, and I was doing that at Hobart, so that's not a slight on you guys, but it's perfect. It's the perfect workout in that climate, especially through the winter. And Hutch, I gotta say, it's the least JUCO thing that you and I have ever done, and that's okay. We appreciate you guys coming on, and definitely wish you well and over this course of this next week and beyond. It's been really cool to see you guys continue to take steps forward, and even through COVID, I can't believe it's been 3 years, but you guys have a bright future, and we wish you well.
Yeah, thank you guys. We appreciate you guys having us on.
Yeah, thank you guys. This was great. Enjoyed listening to the past episodes, and appreciative of you guys asking us to be on here. Let's ride, let's ride, let's ride.